The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can tune in once again, and want to just remind you, just because you hear us discuss any tax strategies, real estate opportunities, etc., that you should always check with your existing advisors. Let's make sure that you understood what we meant for you to. And more importantly, that your advisors think that whatever the information that we delineated is, it makes sense for you and would actually enhance or further your objectives. And for any of you that don't have existing advisors, feel free to visit our website at beaplanner.com. That's beaplanner.com, and once you're out there, you can click the forms link, which is up towards the top right of that web page. And if you'll complete at least step one, form one, that'll give us enough information to then have a phone call with you and tell you if or how we might be able to help you achieve your objectives. And you know, if you're new to multifamily real estate syndications, no problems. We are a valid alternative for you to learn that arena without necessarily having to join one of the mentor programs, although there are certainly some that fit many folks, and happy to give you my 2 cents on that, since I've been members of the, at least most of the Houston organizations. But I do recommend, for the right reasons, that some people actually go that route, and it really depends in large measure on whether you're an accredited investor and you need access to the type of transactions that non-accredited or unaccredited investors can invest in. So I know that's kind of a drive-by, but effectively, and I've mentioned already these real estate private partnership syndications, and I just want to drill down on that quickly here with some definitions. A real estate private partnership syndication is a situation where we have multiple investors. You could have, you know, several hundred, depending on how big the property or properties. If it's a portfolio of properties, you could have several hundred, or I suppose even several thousand, that passively pull their funds in a partnership, which is offered under the U.S. SEC's crowdfunding statute. That's the Securities Exchange Commission. And in that scenario, a syndicator or a sponsor or a lead partner, common terms for the same role, serve as the manager who is responsible for choosing a property, or finding a property. I would start there, I suppose, then choosing among the options, performing assorted due diligence to make sure that it's viable, and then arranging for its acquisition, including undertaking the necessary debt and arranging equity, an equity raise. That's where you put your money in along with all the other folks to the partnership, and gives you enough money to not only close, but typically you're looking to do some deferred maintenance or some upgrades to a property, and so there's a lot of money involved, and there's a lot of important steps. So some other mentors may feel differently. I personally avoid first-time syndicators, and I understand those of you out there that maybe were at one time a first-time syndicator are going to say, well, you know, how do we ever get experience? Well, you go do what a lot of syndicators do, is you go work with somebody that's already a syndicator. Volunteer. You know, you may be surprised what an existing syndicator would be willing to do with you, you know, and you can learn many ways. You can learn the business, but having the experience with real hands-on day-to-day is just irreplaceable. And, you know, I use the example of my international flights back and forth. There's nothing that makes me feel better than seeing a gray-haired captain come out of that cockpit on a break and knowing that, hey, that guy probably was flying in Vietnam. He probably was shot at. I like people that have been shot at in life and have lived to tell about it, and we know how they're going to react, or we can presume that they must have reacted in a positive fashion to be still able to tell you about it or still be able to fly an aircraft. You know, the reality is there's some things that you have to bat 1,000% to still be walking and to discuss what you did for a living. So I have a lot of respect for those pilots. In any event, the manager's role is also tasked with managing the ongoing operations of the partnership and its assets throughout its existence. That includes hiring staff, engaging contractors. If you don't hire, you know, if you don't have a big enough property to have in-house staff, and then, you know, leasing staff and maintenance operations and accounting, reporting, all the things that have to be done, the manager is responsible to see that that all happens. And some lead partners, sponsors, syndicators are better at it than others, and as far as I'm concerned, you can't do too much due diligence. I mean, you need to allow the time to do it. Don't show up at the last minute and expect everybody else in the group is going to put the brakes on just so you can get comfortable. Start early and talk to as many people as you need to, but don't delay unduly a transaction. And I was just talking to a client yesterday, in fact, and he was talking about how he wasn't sure if he was going to have some funds available, but he's communicated very clearly with the lead partner as to the situation and what needs to happen, and so the lead is aware, and he's not the only one. I can assure you every lead partner has a list of folks. It's kind of the antithesis of a wait list, although some of them maintain wait lists too. You'd be surprised some of the followings that some of the syndicators have, to where they hardly have to do much more than announce that they've got their next transaction, and boy, they're flooded with offers of people that want to be involved. But there's also people that the uncertainty won't, I mean, you can't, the lead partner cannot close with your, typically with your commitment. Now, granted, the lead partner typically is not going to raise just enough money to get through closing. I mean, they've got more than enough before they're going to walk into a closing, at least to get the closing done, and then they may have some additional funds come in after that so that they can handle rehab and other operating cost. But in any event, as consultants, what we do is we essentially, number one, we don't sell investments. I get that question all the time. Number two, we don't recommend or promote specific investments or specific syndicators or sponsors or lead partners, but rather we assist or we seek to assist your understanding of what you're signing up for should you choose to move forward with any given transaction. And, you know, especially in today's market, understanding the consequences of being wrong on how much distress might be involved with a specific property. It can be the difference between you making money, just getting your money back, or less than that, maybe not getting all of your money, if any of your original capital back. That's happened more than we'd like to see in the recent 1 to 2 years. And so I'm not telling you that I've got the magic crystal ball, but I can tell you when some of the assumptions are not rational, when I look at the pro forma information. And then also, you know, we have some tools that we can do background checks on. Again, they're not 100%. And I would tell you, when you interview syndicators, ask them for information, ask them for referrals, not just the people that love them. Ask them for some where the investors weren't happy with them, so you can understand what the practical realities were on previous transactions. Because nobody, if you've been in the syndication business for a while, has just, you know, hit a grand slam every time out of the gate. There's always hardship. And frankly, you want to deal with somebody that's had some hardship, but they were able to navigate through the rough waters. So in any event, I wanted to turn to a minute. Let's talk about some of the current news that's out and about. You know, we had a, and I've lost track of where I think today is going to be the vote, but as you may know, if you're following the news, the still another government shutdown is looming, and I think there's been wide agreement at this point, so this may be old news. I haven't had a chance to review anything updated past this article, the 13th, so that was yesterday, but it's... you know, theoretically, let's see, this CBO estimates that this bill would set an overall base discretionary budget authority for fiscal year 2025, that would be through the end of September, at $1.6 trillion, with $893 billion for defense and $708 billion for non-defense. Boy, that seems like a jump on the defense side of things, because I know the fiscal year ended September 24, $893 billion was about what the total expenditure was, and the only reason I remember that is because for the first time, defense was less than our interest expenditure on the debt, which hit I believe it was just over $1 trillion for the first time in our nation's history. And I'm going to keep saying it. We need to support the current DOGE effort to find at least $2 trillion. I think they can end up with more the way it's looking. And who among us realized just how many, at least hundreds of billions of dollars were being wasted? I mean, we knew it was being wasted, perhaps. It's not easy to support annual 30% increases in budget requests at 465 agencies across our federal government. And the only reason I say that's because I know I've had or had a client, a guest, that stayed at one of our properties that was involved with a DOD contractor, that he was part of their team that would submit the annual budget, and he told me, he said, you know, if we don't ask for a 30% increase over the prior year, we're not going to get what we got in the prior year. And think about the years that have built up in the government apparatus where that's been the mindset across, you know, an incredible pool of funds that go into that annual request. It's no, there's just no surprise at all that it's contributed to the mess we're in. And then when you start peeling back the layers and you realize, as we're realizing now, how many members of Congress are involved, you know, they're on the government dole, I guess. You know, I remember seeing Senator Whitehouse, I think he may be, is it Connecticut that he's a senator from? And here, two or three weeks ago, he was just going off on Musk and Doge and, you know, it's unconstitutional and who elected them, etc. Well, come to find out, his wife is the president or CEO, maybe both, of an NGO that's been getting hundreds of millions, I believe. Maybe it's a couple billion even. I've lost track of all the egregious spending. And, you know, it never fails to be the case that the people that are screaming the loudest are usually the most egregious abusers or related thereto. And, you know, I saw I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal, an op-ed. I think it was an op-ed. It would have to have been for this type of thought process to make the headlines. But and I forget who the author was, but he was talking about the Congo and all the things that wouldn't happen in the Congo folks' world if it wasn't for us providing the foreign aid. And I couldn't help but think about what I've heard Senator Rand Paul say many times throughout the Ukraine war support that we've provided. And the concept is quite simple. You know, we don't have enough money to pay our own bills. And while it would be great if we had a savings account and we took a look, you know, each year or each request that we are given to fund and say, well, okay, we can take some money out of savings to cover this expenditure, and this is a good reason or a good purpose. But to say that we're going to go on the hook and borrow still more money without any sort of guarantee until Donald Trump finally put his foot down and said, we're not doing it without guarantees. And you would have thought he was, you know, the most unpatriotic and evil ruler, if I can use that word, that there's ever been. The fact that he would resist paying for the security of Ukraine, which I, you know, that argument, I'm not the one to make the argument for or against. I just tell you, mathematically and financially, we don't have the money. It's math. It's not Democrat. It's not Republican. It's the math. And until we rectify our own budgetary problem, I just don't see that we should be helping others avoid their budgetary problem. And it's just common sense. But, of course, we're talking about Congress, so common sense doesn't always matter. Let's go ahead and take our first break. I suspect we'll be back momentarily. We're limping along on our tech today, but so far I believe we're still connected. So we'll return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man.
Welcome back to this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We were talking just before the break on the continuing resolution, which I presume, as it always does, will get passed here before the deadline tonight that would otherwise shut down the government. And of course, it never seems not to be the case. I forget how many years now we've had no final budget. I suspect we're as close as we've ever been with the current bill that's been working its way through Congress. I believe the House has passed at least a bill that President Trump seems to be pleased with. I don't know that the Senate is officially on board yet, and I don't know that, I think the Senate passed a version of a budget bill that would not have given Mr. Trump his one big, beautiful bill, but I think the last I read that that seemed to be the next focus for the Senate, was trying to do so, since there's some tricks they've got to play budgetarily and procedurally to get that done without requiring much help from the Democrats. But in any event, you know, it's good that the GOP is finally acting in concert, and it looks like the Democrats are the ones that are self-imploding. There's a lot of Democrats that are just fit to be tied that the Senate appears to be giving in and acquiescing to the Republicans. But frankly, they don't have a whole lot of political capital these days to resist. But in any event, the problem we've got is, you know, the all the goodies that Mr. Trump campaigned on, if those were to actually happen, it's an incredible amount of money. It's somewhere between $5 and $15 trillion of spending, and I don't care how many years you want to play that out, it wreaks havoc on the not only the cumulative debt, but that interest cost that I just mentioned earlier of $1 trillion or more now. That's it's just bad on so many fronts. I mean, it's not just the amount of financial oxygen it sucks out of the system. It's a security risk, you know, that we could owe that much money. And in fact, we could owe a lot of that money to our enemies, or who could be our enemies, countries like China. And, you know, it's again, we've got to move towards cutting our spending, which it looks like we finally have some wind at our sails on that front. If Doge continues to uncover cuts that appear to me, at least, that they're not hard. It's like I've said for a while now, Mr. Trump, in my estimation, could cut 30% of the federal budget in his sleep, and most people wouldn't miss it. Now, most people, in my definition, doesn't include all of the folks that are dining at the trough of the U.S. Treasury Department, where they're getting huge amounts of money out on the programs associated with programs like the USAID program. I mean, when you look at those programs, you know, those programs, I'm going to suggest, are for people that live on a balanced budget. Okay, if you can do all that and still have money left in your account, hey, that's awesome. But don't take all of our tax dollars and then borrow many more. And again, just to remind of the numbers here, our collections are in the $5 to $5.5 trillion a year range. That's tax receipts that we take in, and we're expending somewhere in the $7 to $7.5 trillion range. We've got a $2 trillion excess of spending over receipts each and every year at the moment, and projected by the Congressional Budget Office to be the same for another 10 years. And as you can imagine, there's so many things that break down when you have that imbalance in terms of what we can fund at the government level without taking on additional taxes. And yet, that's not what we're looking at right now. Mr. Trump has floated several changes to the tax code that would have favorable implications for some, like the middle class. Could be the largest tax cut in history for working Americans, is what is being touted. And there's also tax issues that would affect the industry that we're most interested in, the multifamily market, both from an owner and a renter perspective. And anything that puts more money in those pockets, especially the renters, is usually going to be good for the apartment owners. And here's just a short list of some of the more, let's say, profound items. No tax on tips. My. Now, that's an idea that would involve renters, I would think. It's estimated to save hospitality workers $10 billion per year. Okay, so, and that doesn't sound like that much money in the overall, but if you're a waitress or an Uber driver or other form of hospitality worker, that's a big deal. No tax on Social Security is number two on that list. Now, that's a 10 times impact of no tax on tip. That would save retirees $96 billion per year. Now we're getting into real money, huh? No tax on overtime pay. It's the third item on the list. $64 billion. And then finally, we're going to stop at number four here, and this is huge, and this affects a lot of business owners. Restoring the 2017 tax Trump break, tax breaks. So the TCJA, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, as you may recall, we've talked about it at various times since it occurred, included changes. We got more tax brackets, which effectively, for depending on where you were at in the overall taxable income range, it could have a pretty good sized impact on your actual tax calculation, because there were more brackets to overlay different levels of taxable income. And the other provisions that were set to expire, things like the qualified business income, 20% reduction on pass-through from a trade or business activity to the owners. And then there's assorted other, but it's a big number. The Democrats are none too happy about it. They seem to forget that a large chunk of this tax act would affect the middle class Americans. They seem to think that all we have are billionaires that file tax returns, which is obviously far from the truth. But this happens even as many folks, old and young, are still feeling the sting of inflation and would welcome more after-tax income to pay the mortgage or rent. Evictions and delinquency are on the rise, and probably will become more so. I know there's a bill that's tracking through, I believe it's the nation, but if it's no, or maybe it's just Texas, but if that bill happens, it's going to make it a lot easier to evict or evict squatters and others that are in your rental units, and in fact can happen in many cases without there being a court hearing. It would simply be a request for summary judgment by the landlord. But in any event, any additional cash flow that these actions with the tax code could take that would help the tenant stay current would be appreciated, speaking as a landlord. Also, there may be enough benefit from those assorted points that first-time home buyers might be able to finally afford a home, although I'll tell you, it's going to take a combination of factors. The interest rates are probably the first thing that have really choked off both the seller and the buyer, because sellers aren't willing to let go of a property they're living in that's got a 3% interest rate when they know once they turn around they've got to go buy something new that's going to have a much higher rate. But the 2017 TCJA, one thing that I want to mention that's huge in the syndication space is it would restate the bonus depreciation that was so prevalent literally from the moment that tax bill had passed. And you know, we look at a typical $100,000 investment in a multifamily property, year one often would return that much in write-off due to the ability to increase and accelerate the depreciable components. And that boosts cash flow for real estate investors. So that helps keep the market moving, keeps properties trading, and, you know, it's generally thought to be a good thing for the overall economy. Let's see. There are some downside issues, though, as pointed out in this article. This article, by the way, is put out by one of the more prolific syndication companies. I believe they're in the Florida market, so they've been in a pretty healthy market. But anyway, the downsides that they point out, tariffs on imports. I'm not sure that's actually a downside. I think it depends on, you know, whose ox is getting gored, right? And, you know, I can't ever get the thought out of my mind about what Trump has said on numerous occasions. And every time he's been met with, well, oh, that's not fair kind of reactions. And he said many times, hey, we don't want to raise tariffs. How about we go the other way? How about you eliminate all your tariffs on our products? We'll eliminate all of our tariffs on your products coming into, you eliminate the tariffs on your products coming to our shores, and we'll do the same on products that we want to, or you do the same on products that we want to sell. And boy, you would think that would be great. That would be fair play. But no, that's not, you know, America is, you know, effectively the market that everybody wants to sell into. And it just seems as if they think that we should just stand by and watch their farmers and their automakers and their equipment makers, you know, have free rein in our markets, even when in many cases there's heavy government subsidies going on, you know, the foreign government subsidizing their producers. And they seem to think that, well, you know, America is so wealthy, it's okay, you know, it's fair. And you know, I don't think ultimately if Mr. Trump imposes tariffs on foreign goods, I don't see anything happening except maybe Americans start buying American again, if you're not already. And you know, to show you just how unfair the other countries are being, they didn't just apply tariffs. Some, in the case of Canada, and in the case now, it appears Europe's going to do the same thing. They're taking our products off their shelves. It's not a question of raising a tariff. They're not even allowing it to be sold. That shows you the true intent. And they seem to think that that's going to cause more pain to us than it is them. And I don't know. I know I'm not, I don't partake in the European liquors that are sold here. I'm not in the Northeast where I buy, you know, Quebec's energy. I'm sure there's some things I'm getting secondarily, you know, through an Amazon maybe, or at Walmart where they're made overseas. But again, we've got the dominant platform for selling goods. And I would suggest, you know, that he or she who hath the gold gets to set the rules. And that's basically what Trump is doing. But those tariffs will be an incredible source of revenue for the U.S. if they're played out correctly, I would suggest, and or additional jobs, additional factories being built here, and that raises the tax revenues. And maybe we won't run out of the discretionary portion of the budget that we're headed towards right now. 2029 is the likely time frame that occurs, and that's going to be a problem, folks, because that's when, as you've heard me say before, we'll no longer be able to pay 100% of the interest on our debt. Now, that's assuming we don't uncover significant cost savings from all the cuts that Doge is looking at, recommending. And you know, you can either you can approach this conundrum in a couple of ways, at least, maybe more. You can either raise taxes to fund those costs, or you can cut the cost of providing, you know, I've forgotten all the things we were providing the Congo. I mean, if we eliminate that, it's not, relative to our overall budget, it's not a lot of money, but it's a lot of money if you start adding up the Congo with I shouldn't say other countries' names because I didn't read the entire article, but let's just say we're paying for most of the world to live. And you know, what's really amazing when you think about it is that proponents of these programs talk about the goodwill that results, and yet that's not what we see in practice. What we see in practice is extreme resentment towards the U.S., and it's like, you know, we can get that for free. Why do we need to pay to have such a bad, reputation with so many foreign countries. And I see it in my travels. I mean, I don't feel like I'm a target, but I can tell you that a lot of foreigners just think, well, Americans have money and that's about it. They don't tend to put too much of a premium on the American lifestyle, et cetera, because as we all know, that doesn't necessarily mean Americans are happy. And I know I've seen that around the world. I've seen how many cultures that don't have really anything materialistically are some of the happiest people in the world. And that just reminds me, sometimes we should stop and think about how the other folks live. Let's see, I want to just finish up a couple of more points on this concept of either helping or hurting, advantages or disadvantages to the tax proposal. Higher interest rates will keep renters out of home buying or out of the home buying market and increase demand for apartments. That's true to an extent. But at the same time, higher imported construction materials could depress apartment construction and new supply. The supply and demand imbalance in favor of the landlords could push the rents higher. Ultimately, the valuations for multifamily investments will rise or fall based on how net operating income changes. As we've discussed in the past, net operating income, or NOI, is the gold standard, if you will, that we use to value what an apartment project is worth. But ultimately, those valuations will rise and fall based on how net operating income changes as inflation hits both the revenue and the operating expense lines. There'll be a lot of moving parts, but in the end, it appears it could be a net positive for multifamily real estate investors who can increase rents while controlling costs. And this all goes back to the comment that we've made many times that as an investor, you really want your money in hard assets that will go up with inflation or down, so that you're not just sitting still while inflation's taking off like a rocket ship. You want to participate and go along for the ride. And to sum this up, we'll probably see some fairly drastic changes to the tax code and tariffs in 2025. I think it's pretty obvious so far. What are we, not even 100 days into the new administration? And boy, if you don't understand those two points, I mean, the tariffs are incredible, what is coming. I believe April 1st is the biggest bump we will have seen in a long time. And even if the administration isn't successful in getting all of the tax cuts they want, it appears to be fairly certain that tenants are going to do okay under the new rules, to where there'll be more money entering the rental real estate system vis-a-vis rents. But inflation does occur. There's already some movement in the wrong direction, although the latest numbers look like they were headed the right way. But I think, the reality is that if we do cut taxes by much, that's going to be the tendency, is to see inflation go up. But anyway, I didn't mention much about Roth conversions this week, but I want to just remind you, I've been getting a lot of interest here just recently. I think some people are actually starting to realize what I mean when I talk about converting a Roth and some of the reasons why the Roth is going to be your blanket, if you will, to protect you moving forward. And the problem with everything we were talking about with the budget deficit is that it takes time to turn the ship around. And in the meantime, the government has obligations that have to be paid. So in any event, keep thinking Roth, especially if you're embarking on or taking on the multifamily investment arena. There's no better illustration of the planets having aligned, if you will, for purposes of getting your pre-tax IRAs and 401 funds over from pre-tax accounts into Roth after, key point, after you've invested the funds. But anyway, call me, or better yet, go to the website baplanner.com, fill out step one, form one on the forms page, and then schedule a call. You'll see the link right next to the forms. I'll be happy to spend some time with you to explain how we might help you. Glad you could join us this week. We'll be back on Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on AM 700, KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.